Welcome into the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Thursday, March 18th, and we are in another exit interview. Today, we're going to be talking about the AFC East. Of course, if you're unfamiliar with the AFC East off the top of your head, that is the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, the New England Patriots, and the New York Jets. There's a lot to talk about here. We got four really interesting franchises that are in really interesting spots. And I can't wait to get into it. But first, Jack Wallace, how are you doing today? March Madness sort of starts today, really gets going. We're less than 24 hours.
Well, technically, of course, March Madness does start today with the first four. But of course, it always is a little tricky on really not as much technically, but spiritually when it starts, because, of course, the brackets do not lock today. And that's basically when we really count it starting is when the brackets locked in, we're ready to go, and we're ready for the action. Right now, actually, is Texas Southern against Mount St. Mary's. The winner of that game will go on to play Michigan. Which I know it doesn't matter much. It's a 16 seed. That game is in the second half right now. Wichita State Drake is next up. Lots of fun games today. Michigan State UCLA is the big one tonight. So looking very much forward to that. But this is all about football. We're getting right into it with our third episode of the exit interview series. And this one, we got the AFC East, as you were talking about, Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. This one has been a very intriguing division as it's basically been the Patriots territory for a decade and a half. And then Tom Brady peaced out. So this has been the first year, basically within our lives, give or take maybe a year or two, that we're talking about the AFC East in a full year without Tom Brady. It has been a ridiculously long time since we can say that sentence.
And it's actually the first time in our intelligent lives, not the first time in our lives, of course.
But yeah, I think we're like 1 year, 2 years old.
The first time in our intelligent lives that we can talk about the AFC East and not mention the Patriots as the AFC East champions from the season before, or at least them making the playoffs. The Patriots didn't make the playoffs last year, which is a blessing and a curse because, as we're going to talk about, the Patriots are coming back swinging next year. They're swinging for the fences this offseason. We had heard that they had been actually trade discussions for Deshaun Watson. They were definitely in on trade discussions for Matthew Stafford. So they are looking to make some moves, obviously re-signing Cam Newton. We'll get into that. But right off the top, we just wanted to update on a few free agents that we each had sort of picked out as notable signings so far this offseason. So obviously for me, the biggest signing, the biggest news of the offseason has been Bud Dupree coming to Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
5 years, $82.5 million. For you math nerds out there, that is a average salary of 16.5 a year, making him one of the NFL's highest paid pass rushers. We certainly hope he can perform like that, but the Titans have completely flipped their defense around. And obviously they're looking for Bud Dupree to be the cornerstone of that. Also re-signing Jayon Brown there, but some other ones that I'm looking at here. Shaq Barrett is going back to Tampa Bay. He was probably the best free agent prospect as a pass
Big
rusher
signing.
In
Big
this
signing.
Class, but obviously, Tampa Bay coming off of a Super Bowl, they're going to get anyone that they want back if they choose to pay them accordingly. And it seems like all the guys are really bought in there. Also, Matt Judon signing with New England. I love that. I think Bill Belichick is going to be able to get 8 or 9 sacks a year out of him for pretty much the entirety of his contract. He can be a real steady contributor there. But the one that I'm really interested in, are the Patriots, and we'll talk about this later, but the Patriots tight end moves.
Yeah.
So on what day was that? Was that on Monday when free agency opened? I don't remember whether it was Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Monday when free agency officially opened. One of the first big contracts that came out was Jonnu Smith, the tight end from Tennessee, getting a $12.5 million a year deal. For I think 3 years. So he is getting paid big time. But then 2 days later, the Patriots go out and sign Hunter Henry to a two-year deal. So this could play out really interesting, and it seems like Belichick's trying to revive the Gronk and Aaron Hernandez tight end duet, if you will. And I think the real question, and again, we'll get into this later in the show, but what can Cam Newton do for this team? But who are some guys that stood out to you, some signings, some moves that really stood out to you over the first couple of days?
Well, the one team that I think people really aren't talking about at all that is a team that made some nice moves here are the Las Vegas Raiders. It's a team that struggled a lot last season, needed to make some good moves, and I think they've been kind of quietly making some nice ones here. Nothing too crazy, but some nice moves nevertheless. Yannick Ngakoue, a long-term member of the Jaguars, played with the Baltimore Ravens last year. Now he's going to be a Raider, two-year, $26 million contract. It can expand out to four, I saw here. Kenyon Drake at running back, as well as also picking up Theo Riddick, re-signing him to the Raiders. Also re-signing Richie Incognito was a big move at the guard position. One of their longtime guards, 38 years old, so he's pretty much going to be there through retirement. Also getting Quentin Jefferson and Jonathan Haskins. Jonathan Haskins to re-sign Quentin Jefferson from Buffalo, as well as John Brown from Buffalo. So just some guys here. Again, nothing super, super, super big, except for Ngakoue is a pretty big pickup. But a lot of these guys are just, they needed to get a refreshing sort of vibe in Las Vegas. It had been a tough year for them, and that was some big moves there. Obviously, New England have made a lot of big moves as well. They needed to have a lot of major changes pretty obviously in that team. And then lastly, another group to look at is the New York Jets actually picked up some decent moves. They got Keelan Cole as wide receiver out of Jacksonville, Justin Hardy at cornerback. But the big one was Corey Davis and then Carl Lawson. Both these guys signing to pretty hefty contracts. Corey Davis, 3-year, $37.5 million. Carl Lawson, 3-year, $45 million. Lawson, end out of Cincinnati. Corey Davis, wide receiver out of the Tennessee Titans. So I think that the Jets are actually making some pretty nice moves here. And we're going to get to the Jets today, of course, later on in the podcast, to what they have a pretty good slew of picks. And again, another reason why, not to beat the dead horse at this, but Houston's in a lot of trouble because they're a team that's pretty much just around the same level of competitiveness as the Jets have been. Yet the Jets are raking in all these big free agents and actually have more money to spend, plus good picks, and Houston's lacking a lot of that. So I'm liking where the Jets are going.
With these signings, the Jets have really bolstered their offense and gotten some weapons in there that can help and help you get an accurate assessment of your quarterback. Should they choose to stick with Sam Darnold, they'll definitely get an accurate assessment of him this year, especially if they can fix some of the offensive line issues. Give him a lot of time back there. We'll really get to see how much Sam Darnold can do when they have a good roster filled out and they're spending money and drafting well. But obviously, that includes drafting well, and we have yet to see how they'll do there this offseason. But let's get into the top team in the NFC East from last year, the Buffalo Bills, who were fueled by MVP level play, although he did not always play at that level. MVP level play from Josh Allen at multiple points in the year. This was a team that started off hot, cooled off a little bit in the middle of the year due to some COVID things, due to some injuries. Then once they got Tre'Davious White back on the field, once they got all their guys back, they were cooking. And they cooked all the way to the AFC Championship game, where they lost to the Super Bowl runner-up, Kansas City Chiefs. So, Jack, take me through a little bit of what you think some of the best parts of the season were, and how you think that this team can get better for the next year.
Well, the old saying goes, party like it's 1999, but in this case, it was party like it's 1995. The Buffalo Bills winning a playoff game, in fact, winning a couple playoff games here, looked very competitive and very solid throughout the playoffs. Of course, they ended up falling in Kansas City with an incredible, incredible game, but man, it was quite a great season. Poyer and Hyde at safety were fantastic for Buffalo with another great defense here. Of course, beating New England's AFC East championship streak, which is, thank God, that's finally over. And the regular season was finished on a 6-0 run, going to 13-3 overall, which was their best record since the 90s. only things really negative to say about the season is they did get blown out by the Titans midway through the year. Really, their only loss that was anything other than a really tight competitive game the whole way. I mean, they only lost four times. The other three were very competitive, very strong games. And they also could not get past Kansas City again. They lost in the regular season and the postseason. So the Bills could not get over the Chiefs hump, which has been difficult for them over the last few seasons. But big, big strong points of this team to point out. First of all, quarterback. We know this team has struggled with having a quarterback for a while. Allen is the answer. Allen is the future. Allen is the solution. That's it. Josh Allen is legit. I think that argument is long since done. As you said, MVP level performance this season was a beauty to watch him play, and he has been doing fantastically with this team. Looking at some other solid positions, as I mentioned, Hyde and Poyer are absolutely elite at the safety position, so no reason of change anywhere near here, as well as running back. Now, running back was an interesting position because I think it's safe in the sense of that I don't think Zach Moss is going to be changing here, but I do think that some supplementary backs can be included. Now, I don't think that's trying to replace Moss in a way, but kind of like what the Falcons are doing, just to bring in my team as an analogy here, of a team that they run their offense so heavily through the pass that it's using the running back is not negative, but you don't really need a high caliber running back, but you do need to have something in there. And both these teams are going to try to get some other backs in, especially to help Moss out here with the Buffalo Bills.
Right. And Zach Moss showed that he was capable of playing at a starting level in the NFL, though I'm not sure he's an adequate feature back for a Super Bowl winning team, but we've seen that you don't really need a feature back. I think this backfield can be good enough to get this team to a Super Bowl if they can add one more receiver, if they can fix the defense, some of their issues on defense, because they have a great defense. But they've got to get better on the defensive line. They've got to improve the pass rush. And I think they're one or two players away from really being able to cause some trouble for a team like Kansas City in the playoffs. This is a really good team, and this is going to be a really good team next year, in my opinion. And I say that because, A, they don't lose that many guys. They don't lose anybody important. Everybody who's very important to that team is coming back next year. And B, we have so many reasons to trust this front office. We saw what happened when they traded for Stephon Diggs last year. That one move might have changed their entire outcome of their season and might have even changed Josh Allen's career trajectory. I mean, you think about what Josh Allen would be, how we'd be discussing Josh Allen right now if he didn't have a guy like Stephon Diggs, if we never got to see him with a guy like Stephon Diggs. So I think just continuing to add more secondary pieces on the offense and really improving that D-line, really getting a stud pass rusher in there, I think those are the logical steps to the Buffalo Bills taking that next step from Super Bowl contender to Super Bowl participant.
And I think that is that next sort of step they have to get. So looking at some safe positions here, I really think linebacker could be one. The unsafe more position is because this team loves to run a nickel defense. They run a nickel defense more than most other teams in the league, which means they're only going to have two linebackers up there instead of three. But I do think that they can add some more in this set. I don't think it's particularly the strongest point of the defense. As I mentioned, I still think it's that secondary, Tre'Davious White as well, up at cornerback. And I do think cornerback is also another position that can be improved as well, just to add some other pieces around him. And I know, again, as we've mentioned, Buffalo's defense is still the pride and strength and sort of the bread and butter of the reason why this team has done so well over the past few years. We've talked about it on the same exit interviews we had a year ago about how the defense on this team is still very solid. But I do think those other pieces can be used well to get around it. Looking at the overall picks, this team has 7 picks as of right now, and it's pretty normal with a 30th pick in the first round, 61st in the second, and 94th in the third. So for some of our best fits here, who do you think could be some really great guys to put into this system up in Buffalo?
Well, obviously, you could look at the best available pass rusher at that point. That's going to be more guys like maybe Joseph Osai, should he fall that far, Zaven Collins, Aziz Ojulari from Georgia. Those are going to be some of the guys that you're looking at, guys who may not be quite as developed yet. Also, Jalen Phillips and Jason Owe are two guys in there. I'm really looking at them going interior lineman here, though. Why? Because they need one more guard. And who's a better mauler in the run game in this draft as an interior lineman than Wyatt Davis from Ohio State? He is about a second round grade. It may be a little high for them to draft him at the end of the first round, but I don't think it matters. I really like Wyatt Davis. I think he was, I mean, I know for a fact he was a three-year starter at Ohio State. He's played a lot of ball. He's played a lot of high-level ball. And that's a guy that I would trust to come in and protect my MVP-level quarterback. Also, looking at cornerback, I mean, they can always improve in the secondary, even though they have a bunch of studs. I think they could use one more cornerback. Looking at a guy like Sean Wade out of Ohio State, or looking at Aaron Robinson out of UCF, some guys that are going to be available towards the end of the first round. But let's move on to talk about another team. Jack, tell us about the Miami Dolphins.
Well, Miami's a very intriguing team, I think, to talk about, because they're a unit that has been very back and forth over the season. They have a lot of big questions coming to this next year, and I'm really, really interested to sort of see how they're going to fit in. They went 10-6. They were second overall in the division, but they missed the playoffs, and they missed the playoffs barely. But this was a team that basically nobody thought was going to be close to the playoffs. They were way up high in the picks last season. We said they had a ton of work to do last year. And they kind of did it. They had 10 wins for the first time in years, 9-3 finish after a 1-3 start, and four of the six teams they lost to were playoff teams. So this was a pretty competitive team with a pretty tough schedule. And I get it's AFC East without Brady, but the Bills kind of were 13-3 anyway, so you still had a powerhouse team to play against. And either way, it's still – I have to give it to the Dolphins. They did pretty well this year. Now, the one big part about this team that really needs to be focused on, their offensive line was not good at all. They did not play well in any degree of it. They were 28th overall, really poor performance from the O-line here. And Tua was kind of weird. I know that everyone's been talking about this, but it's just a little bizarre how Tua was brought in to be this big-time, huge quarterback. They had a really high pick with him. And again, we had talked about that injuries have been an issue, but he just didn't really do much. And Ryan Fitzpatrick was kind of their guy. And now he's off to Washington, which I don't think we've covered that yet, but he is off to Washington. So they're out of a backup. So that's sort of the next guy up. And was Brissett signed here? Did Brissett sign with Miami? I know he signed somewhere.
I believe that is the case.
Yeah, so they have him now at least.
But the quarterback situation is tough for them. We know that Deshaun Watson was interested in going there. And they have a pretty good little team, despite it being, I won't want to say entirely devoid, because this is an NFL team, and an NFL team that almost made the playoffs last year. But this is a team that is a lot less talented than many of their opponents in many cases. But Tua is by far the main question, right? Because We've seen that with good coaching, good play calling, and a good defense, which is what they had last year, that Miami can do some things. Miami can win some games, but Tua was really what held them back or took them over the hump. So I know it seems like an obvious thing here to sit here and say, well, it all depends what happens at quarterback, but this is a little bit harder to predict than most, because we've seen Tua operate within a system that let him take shots downfield, like Alabama. We saw what he can do with playmakers all over the field at Alabama, but making those tight window throws, developing the NFL timing, these are all things that he's got to get better at. And I think with them opening up the offense, hopefully, I say hopefully because I don't know that they're going to open up the offense, but hopefully they open up the offense for him in 2021 and we really see what he can do when he can sling it. But also, he wasn't protected very well. He did not have very good protection this year, and they still ended up making it work. So I think Miami is easily one of the biggest question marks going into 2021. Easily.
And that was, again, the part that I had mentioned that was concerning on that point. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this develops, because on the other side of the offense is the question of what are the weapons. And the tight end with Mike Gesicki was very impressive here. I don't see any reason to change that. That's one of the big top picks I have for one of my safer positions.
They just signed Will Fuller today, by the way.
And I didn't know that. Yeah, that's a huge move. Will Fuller was a big reason, sort of in the post DeAndre Hopkins era. And even with DeAndre Hopkins, was a big reason why the Texans were able to do really well in the passing game. One of the few things that actually did do really well. And that really is an important piece to this team. Looking as well at the other list, I have the list of free agents on here. Not too many big time signings. Adam Butler from New England, a defensive tackle. And again, I mentioned Kobe Brissett. Yeah, so he's being here too. So some good guys on that end.
They've solidified their cornerback room, which is, I think, the most important thing that they've done. They now have also they now have three cornerbacks that you can play on the field.
And that's big. And you need to have that.
They've got Byron Jones locked into a long-term deal. They've got Xavien Howard coming off of the league leader in interceptions last year. And they just signed Justin Coleman, who is a very functional slot corner in Detroit. So I think this could be a really good defense next year. The big question is just going to be how much output can they get from their offense? How much explosiveness can they get?
Big point too here. I didn't see this until earlier. Matt Skura from Baltimore also is going to Miami, which that's a big signing. He's been a big reason why that line has been very good for Baltimore. So that I like that a lot. Also looking, I know you put down here as well, Byron Jones. We talked about that a lot last year, signing from the Cowboys, a huge cornerback signing. I don't think there's going to be any change on that this year. Xavien Howard too was very, very efficient out there as well. So that secondary has been greatly improved, but looking ahead to the draft to sort of see who we're looking at here. Now, the draft is looking real good for the Dolphins. The AFC East actually has one of the strongest total. If you want to count the division as a whole, it's probably one of the strongest divisions when it comes to the draft and draft picks. Because as we have made plenty fun of Houston for it, this was the big one. The third overall pick that Miami was able to swindle and swashbuckle away from the Houston Texans. Well, they're getting it now. And they have the 13th or the 18th pick as well in the first round. In the second round, they have the 36th pick. Again, you're welcome, Houston. And then the 50th pick, that's their own third round, the 86th, for a total of 7, because they are another additional one after that. But yeah, their draft is going to be very, very, very top heavy, which you want to have. So for that, who are some guys you're going to look at? Because again, with the number 3 pick and the fact you already know Trevor Lawrence is gone with the first one. So it's saying, who are you going to get basically? Because that number 2 picks the Jets. So how is that going to play out with divisional rivals?
Well, it is going to be all about what is Miami looking for. Do they want to add more explosiveness on offense, or do they want to protect Tua Tagovailoa? I know this is not the sexy pick, but honestly, I would go with Penei Sewell at this spot. I would go with an offensive tackle. I want to make sure that the quarterback that I just picked last year, or the quarterback that I'm going to trade for Deshaun Watson, is protected adequately. We saw that Tua was not able to thrive with the 28th ranked offensive line in the league, especially since his injuries throughout his career. He's been a little injury prone, and that has definitely hampered his mobility now that he is in the pros. And a dislocated hip coming back from that injury is no joke. We don't know what percentage he was at last year. I'm going with the offensive tackle, somebody who can protect my quarterback. But a very popular pick here has also been Ja'Marr Chase from LSU. You get a Biletnikoff Award winner. Coming in with one of the best college quarterbacks that we've seen in the last decade or so in Tua Tagovailoa. So I think that could be a really interesting combination, but I really don't see, unless they trade out, I don't see them going any other direction here than those two guys.
And I sure hope they would for their sake, because both those guys would be immediate and obvious immediately impacts for this team. And honestly, I would still go the Sewell route. He's an indispensable offensive line talent, and that's something that Miami desperately needs. So for them, that's just a complete layup pick. And if you think about it, because they gave away the offensive tackle to get the pick anyway.
Tunsil.
So basically you just get a younger, you could argue even better potential version of him, and you lose essentially nothing. So for the Dolphins, this is a huge, huge win.
And hopefully Penei Sewell doesn't end up with a gas mask bong video coming out on draft day, like Laramie Tunsil did. And that is a fact.
Forgot about that.
That is a fact. Like, I'm not making that up. That's a fact. Oh, go Lord. Look it up. It's real. I hope that's not like a taboo topic. That's a real thing that happened that we would 100% be discussing if it happened today. So
yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Next up, we have the New England Patriots, which again, it still feels weird to talk about this team third, and the fact they were 7-9. Yeah, didn't even get a winning record despite Bill Belichick still at the helm. But to be fair, when you give Bill Belichick nothing, it tends to be hard to work with it. And yes, Cam Newton, you count as nothing. This team finished third in divisional placement, pretty obviously missed the playoffs. Now, they still went 3-3 in the division, which if you go 7-9 and go 500 in your division, that's not too bad. Now, they went the 500. That was very expected. In fact, it basically was the exact thing you would expect, which is sweeping the Jets, getting swept by the Bills, and splitting with Miami. So overall, pretty much as average as you can get. The team did have a ridiculous free agency, though. Tight ends Henry and Smith, wide receivers Bourne Agholor, linebacker Judon, DB Mills, defensive tackle Godshaw, or Godshaw. How do you say that name exactly correctly? Is it, did I say it right?
Devon Godshaw.
Godshaw, there you go. I know it's one of those Cajun names. And then offensive tackle with Brown. So, yeah, this is a really, really good free agency for Bill. Negative moments, pretty obviously the dynasty is officially over for the Patriots. I think that's pretty clear to say here. And I get that they're going to be better next year and it's going to be more stacked, but it was the Brady Bill show. When that got broken up, it's just not the same, and that dynasty is officially done. Cam was pretty bad. There were at least five or six games he started where he got under 100 passing yards, which yep. I know it's the NFL, but that's an MVP player throwing under 100 yards playing the entire game.
I got
game.
Your stats, brother. Don't worry.
Oh, man. And also, other point, one more point here on the negatives, which this was actually, I did not realize, is a pretty shocking stat. Only one of their seven wins was against a playoff team. So, yeah, kind of surprising that their schedule wasn't too hard overall, and they didn't really do anything with it. One win against the playoff team, which is kind of shocking. So, not too great there for the Patriots.
All right, look, everyone is going to be jumping on the Patriots bandwagon for next year. And I understand why. You look at this team and you say this team should not have, on paper, gone 9-7 last year. I think we can all agree on that. 9-7 was overachieving once we saw this team on the field. And they were
That's really a lot on Bill.
They were really two or three plays away from being 9-7. Which is even crazier. That's the craziest thing about this, is that they were two games away from being 9-7. A couple plays, a couple more inches, and they could be. We could be talking about this as a winning team coming into this year. They way outperformed themselves on paper. Yet I don't think their ceiling gets much higher, despite getting Dante Hightower back. Despite getting all the guys that they've gotten in free agency on defense. And let's just look at some of those guys that they've brought in. They lost Joe Thuney to Kansas City. I like that move for the Chiefs. They brought in Matt Judon. They brought in Jonnu Smith, brought in Hunter Henry, the double tight end look, brought in Jalen Mills as a safety to replace Patrick Chung, brought in Nelson Agholor on an $11 million a year contract. That was pretty interesting, but I guess when you got money to spend, you're going to spend it. Getting Devon Godshaw, like you said, Kendrick Bourne, Kyle Van Noy coming back. This team is stacking up their defense to prop up Cam Newton as much as possible. And I realized why they re-signed Cam Newton, right? We realized why they did it. Bill Belichick would rather go with a known evil that he knows Cam's weaknesses, and he's spent a year with him, and Cam can run the system. And Cam had his second best completion percentage output of his career last season, despite having his second lowest yardage output and his by far the lowest touchdown output, only scoring 8 touchdowns in 15 games last year.
Well, this team needs balance. They need balance.
And I think what Bill Belichick is saying is, we did just enough on offense to get to 7-9 last year. If we can just prevent the other team from scoring one more touchdown, you're probably looking at 9-7, 10-6.
And this team also, they can't use the offensive line excuse either. This team with the number 4 offensive line rating last season, they're going to be just as strong this one. So, yeah, that is a big point.
And the quick passing game helps in that as well.
Yeah.
Cam Newton was kept pretty clean last year. I mean, he only took 31 sacks. That's the second lowest in his career, except for 2019, where he only played two games. But you look across the board, he posted in the bottom half of his career to the bottom of his career in nearly every stat except for completion percentage. So what does that tell me? That Cam can still put it on the money, but we're not sure how far downfield he can put it on the money anymore. And this is not Cam Newton slander. I'm just seriously questioning what the ceiling of your team is and if you can win multiple playoff games, let alone one playoff game, let alone make the playoffs with Cam Newton as your quarterback in this day and age, in his current state.
And I think that's really tough to answer, because at the end of the day is that you also have to look at the rest of the division and you see the Jets finally getting their act together. And I know I'm not saying they're a playoff team next year, but they are not going to be a two-win team next year either.
And then you have crown off-season champions before we've seen the results of the season.
And I get that, but it's like I couldn't imagine the Jets being worse than 2-14 with people they've signed next year. I can't imagine them being that awful.
Somebody made this point yesterday that I saw. Obviously, you can look back and we say that teams win the offseason every year, and it's usually the big spenders who are the bad teams that have a lot of salary cap space, right? So it'll probably be the Jets this year. It's not going to be the Raiders because they just paid Kenyon Drake $11 million a year, but that's besides the point. It's not going to be one of those teams. The winners of last year's offseason were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And obviously, I know some people probably said that they were the offseason winners, but I think a lot of the media, because they got Tom Brady, and because people were skeptical of how Tom Brady would fit into that offense, I think a lot of talking heads and a lot of people with opinions did not go there as their offseason winners. But now that we've seen the results of the season, they were clearly the offseason winners last year.
And they're already on their way again.
They went from Jameis Winston throwing 30 picks to winning a Super Bowl with Tom Brady.
In one year. And less than that. I mean, even like 6 months, they changed their whole team around. And a lot of that, I think, is Bruce's coaching and being able to get those athletes around. And again, like we said before, and like we'll say again in our exit interview way down the road when we cover the NFC South, it wasn't just Brady, but Brady was a big reason why. And the biggest reason was Brady was why, before we move it, because I know we're talking too much about Brady, but the biggest reason Brady was why, I think, was more the fact that he was Brady more than the actual play on the field. Because so a lot of players were like, I want to play for him. I want to play with this. And it was able to shape the team around on a great mental level. And that's kind of what the Patriots are looking to do here, is that what can they do to say with at least Bill on that end, and say, what can we do to help play with the Patriots to make this team better? Because if you look at the defense, there's still a lot of struggle in this team. The defensive line is their weakest part of the defense. They need to be able to reshape this a lot. Both safety contracts are up. They're going to have to see who's going to start there. And even at cornerback, Gilmore was less efficient than last season. They're going to need some more help on this end as well. The defense is going to need to improve some, which is something we haven't said in a while. And even if you look at the draft, 9 picks overall. They have the 15th overall in the first round, so pretty middle of the pack. Second round pick 46 and third round pick 97. So a little more spread out than a team like the Dolphins are. But again, those picks have a lot you can work with.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking for them to take a quarterback. I'm not going to lie. They have pretty much spent on almost every position. Maybe they could go interior lineman. Maybe Bill Belichick wants another guy on defense, but they're pretty much set across the board unless they wanted to get one of those mid-round. Maybe should a Patrick Surtain drop, or maybe Greg Newsome, the second out of Northwestern. I think both of those guys could fit into the Patriots' future plans. But I will eat my shirt if Bill Belichick doesn't add another quarterback this offseason.
It's going to happen.
This TCU sweatshirt that I'm wearing right now, I will eat it on Instagram Live. I'll finish at least the hood.
We will post that, by the way, if that does happen. I will make sure as the other
Bill Belichick doesn't add another quarterback, because you can't go into this NFL season thinking that Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham are his best options at quarterback, especially when you have the 15th overall pick. And should one of those guys drop, I think Bill Belichick will be all over it, especially in the second round. I think you could even look at a guy like Kyle Trask, who can come
in. Now, I did want to add this just to be certain for this, because I am taking this bet seriously, that does this mean any quarterback or any quarterback that could be starting quality or actually matter? Because we're talking like fifth string, fourth string, like nobody just to add depth. I think it's different than adding someone like in the draft or someone in free agency that actually matters. Like,
look, I'm not going to step up that much on this bet to make it harder on myself. So
to eat your shirt.
So why don't we make it this? I'll theoretically like eat my shirt in spirit. Should they not draft or trade for another quarterback?
That's not like
fourth string. Because I believe the quarterbacks on the roster, and I'm not sure right now, I can go into the contracts and look, but I believe it's Cam Newton, Jarrett Stidham, and Brian Hoyer. That's your quarterback room. I like a guy like Mac Jones going to New England. I like a guy like Kyle Trask going to New England. Even Kellen Mond, I think, would be a really interesting fit there as someone who's been in a pro-style offense, can clearly run the offense.
Yeah, they have to fit that in.
And come into that quarterback room and lead. He's been a four-year starter at Texas A&M. And really, one of the only knocks on him was his lack of experience due to his injuries, which was what really kept him off the field during his time at A&M. But as far as I've heard from scouts, he's improved on tape every single year. And I think that could be a really interesting direction should the Patriots choose to go there in like the second or third round. But let's finish up the AFC East with the laughingstock of the NFL. The new laughingstock of the NFL. You can't say it's the Browns anymore.
No.
The Browns were the original laughingstock of the NFL. Now they've passed the torch when they got their first win in like 2 years over the Jets. That was when they passed the torch as the new laughingstock of the NFL to the New York Jets, who were 2-14. That's good for fourth in the AFC East. And the big question this year is, what are they going to do at quarterback with the second overall pick and Sam Darnold still on the roster?
Well, the good news for the Jets, which really is really good news, is that they have what the Texans do not in terms of other teams that are terrible, and that is options. The Jets have options. They have places to go, and they also had a not bad free agency so far. And again, like you were saying, offseason winners is different from actual winners, and you do have to see how these produce. But if you're the Jets, you needed anything, because this was a team that you really needed to improve anything. Now, anything to talk about this team, they finished 2-14, but they did finish the year 2-1, and both their wins were over playoff teams. So last three games of the season, Jets were legitimately playing well. And I was watching them, was like, okay, they're actually playing like a competent football team, and they did improve. They also have the third highest cap space. Bad points to this team are pretty obvious. They started the season 0-13, and Sam Darnold was not good at the whole football thing. Now, the good positions here, kind of the opposite of New England, the D-line was actually pretty good. Quinnen Williams make a great jump in his play, was far more efficient than last year, even though no one really talked about him a lot, but he actually was much more efficient in his position. Fadu Kassi was also pretty solid. Again, the loss in signing from Cincinnati was very, very good news for New York. So they're getting some good players in here. Again, Marcus May at safety was probably their best defensive player and was also franchise tagged.
Correct.
So that was really big to get him back.
He'll be on the roster next year. He'll be very handsomely paid, but they have the salary cap space to do it. So,
and if you look at Corey Davis being signed as well, they actually have a very solid wide receiver here. So
$12.5 million a year. Let's hope he can produce like it for them.
And if he does, the Jets have pieces. Now, they're not still a great team, but they have pieces to build a team that can be competent, especially in a division that's becoming more and more competitive now. Now, again, the point that we said with the Dolphins, which is why these two teams are similar, and the fact that they have very good drafts, like potential coming up, they also have awful O-lines. And by awful, I mean we said 28th was really bad for the Dolphins. Well, the Jets are 29th, only one spot lower, basically the same, but they're not very good. So it's saying, who do you look to replace in there? Because they desperately need a new offensive line, because the other position, quarterback, as you said, why is Sam Darnold on the roster still? I complained about this when I watched him at USC, and I said, I love Sam Darnold here. Do not go to the draft. You are not ready for this. And then he proceeded to go to the draft, go to the Jets, and has done nothing since. Now, I get that he's had no help, and this year finally will have a little bit, but I'm still not really on the Darnold train. And if there's any way they can get some other pick to replace him, now could be the time, because I don't think they're going to be the number two pick next year. I think they're not going to be a lot higher than that. I don't think it's going to be a Dolphins level of top sort of five to way deeper in the draft, but this is your opportunity to get a franchise player.
And I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, is how many more opportunities do we have with the number two pick? And you have so many options. I mean, that's the beauty and the curse of having a pick like the number two overall pick with a quarterback already on the roster, who you obviously have some level of faith in. It's a big conundrum. Is what do you do with that pick? If I'm Robert Saleh and why am I forgetting? It's not Joe Thomas. I can't remember the Joe Douglas, the Jets GM. If I'm Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, I'm saying, I'm looking at a Houston Texans team that needs draft picks. And the Houston Texans also need a quarterback if they're not going to be rolling with Deshaun Watson in the future, or if Deshaun Watson's not going to be rolling with them, to put it in a little bit better way. But I think the Jets should absolutely trade that second overall pick. I would stick with Darnold. I would give him a prove it year, because you can always find a quarterback in the NFL. You can always find a quarterback. You may not be able to find a franchise quarterback, but you can always find a starting quarterback in the NFL.
I mean, look at Brissett. Look at Brissett going ahead of the Dolphins, and Brissett has proven to be a pretty solid quarterback, not a franchise. Brissett.
The Indianapolis was very competitive with Jacoby Brissett at the helm.
Yeah.
I mean, get a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick that's going to, you know, he's going to go out there and compete and play competent quarterback. You don't necessarily need a world beater quarterback to make the playoffs. Now, to win the Super Bowl, to go somewhere in the playoffs, that's a completely different
But they're not doing that next year. They're not doing that next year.
But if you just want to go to the playoffs, I say roll with Sam Darnold. Let's see what you got with some pieces around him. Improve the offensive line. And if you don't trade the second overall pick, if you can't get a good enough package for it, look, Penei Sewell could be a number one overall pick in most drafts.
Yeah.
Penei Sewell has... If it weren't for Trevor Lawrence, who's one of the highest graded quarterback prospects ever, Penei Sewell is a number one overall pick in a lot of drafts in the last 10, 15 years.
And that's the point that you bring up that I think is interesting, and what I think I was sort of about to say almost, like with my train of thought, and then you sort of finished here, was the point about why Darnold, and I think you sort of went off that, of why he hasn't done well, but he hasn't had the help. And while this season he isn't getting a ton of help, like the line is still not a very good line, there's still issues, but you have a new head coach. We haven't even mentioned him yet, and Saleh coming in there. So a new head coach that should be far, far better than the disaster of Adam Gase. You have a defense with improved components. You have a great wide receiver. You have a good D end. You have these pieces coming together. And again, the Jets are a work in progress. They're still a work in progress, but that's a good point to go forward.
Jets have high picks in all of these rounds. So you don't get an offensive lineman with the second overall pick. Let's say you trade back, or you choose to go with a guy like Justin Fields and get rid of Sam Darnold, see what you can get with for his trade value. You could still go with Elijah Vera Tucker, Alex Leatherwood at, 22 overall?
23, they get from Seattle, overall. Yeah, Seattle's big.
So you could still go Elijah Vera Tucker or Alex Leatherwood at 23 overall. You could still go at 34 overall. You could still go with a guy like Landon Dickerson out of Alabama. I mean, there are all sorts of ways that you can skin this cat with the amount of draft capital that the Jets have and the potential to gain more should they do something with the second overall pick.
And one more pick too before we close this out, just a little nugget to that this team may use as well. Mosley is finally going to play. Yeah, we kind of forgot about CJ Mosley. Didn't play at all last season, opted out. So we're happy to finally get him back. But he's going to be mostly playing at the Mike position with linebacker. They're going to need a Will there as well. So looking at that, you could look at a Nick Bolton from Missouri or a Joseph Osai from Texas. So you could look a little bit around there and whether and whatnot, not in the first round, but looking at maybe a second round, third round pick of trying to feel out maybe someone else to help out that linebacker position, because it's one the Jets have been needing. And having Mosley and a good solid draft pick in there, that's an immediate big time boost for a Jets defense that was hemorrhaging points last season.
Absolutely. Well, if that is all from you, Jack, that is all from me. But quickly, as we did last episode, I want to get your division winner for next year.
Division winner for next year. I may still have to roll with Buffalo because I don't really know who they're losing. They were really, really good last year. I don't know who they're losing.
I'm going in that direction too. I don't think 13-3 is in the cards for them again, but I certainly think they can get to 12-4, 11-5 and win the division. It's all going to depend on, can they beat the Patriots? Can they beat
the
Patriots?
But then the other question, here's the bigger question for you then, because we answered that one pretty easily. Just to answer a little more trickier one as we close out, who's going to get last?
Who's going to get last? It's the Jets again. It's the Jets again. I don't believe in Sam Darnold. I I'm willing
they'll be a
to
little
eat my
better
words.
Though.
And
they're not going to be 2-14.
And that's why I said
it won't be that bad.
That's why I said let's see what we got and build the team around, so that when if we have an opportunity to get rid of Sam Darnold, if we want to move on from Sam Darnold, then we have a ready-made opportunity for another quarterback to step into, and we already know what we have with that team. I see Sam Darnold's career going a lot like Marcus Mariota's.
Yeah. Yeah, I think being a perennial backup.
Perennial backup. And I think there's a lot of potential that got squashed pretty early in his career. And it's going to be up to years 4 and 5 for him to really see if he can find that potential. And if he can't, he's Marcus Mariota. He's a high pick that's going to be a backup for the rest of his career.
I can see that indeed. And so now
Mitch Trubisky is in that club as well, by the way.
That is
who just signed with Buffalo today. I forgot to mention that Buffalo big time upgraded their backup quarterback. Fromm to Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, they're winning the division. Yeah. Okay. I'm sticking with that even stronger than yeah. And so as the first game of March Madness closes out, Texas Southern tops over Mount St. Mary's to move on to the 16 seed to play Michigan. As we finish that game up, we're going to finish up here as well. If there's nothing else to add in
That's
our episode of three. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. We hope you have a wonderful first weekend of March Madness. It's one of the best weekends of the year. Let's be honest.
It's so good. I've waited so long for this weekend.
From Fort Worth, Texas, I am Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace. Peace out, y'all.